Board Gaming with Education, a podcast for anyone curious about how games and education mix. We explore various topics like game-based learning, gamification, and board games, and the impacts they have on learning. Here's your host, Dustin Statz.
Welcome to Board Gaming with Education. I am your host, Dustin, and in this episode, we have Jay and Spencer join us for a geek discussion episode. So in these geek discussion episodes, we don't necessarily talk about a topic related to education. Sometimes they may be related to education, or they just may be related to the board game hobby in general. We do this to introduce maybe some non-gamers to different topics related to board games or games in general. And we also do this for those who are in the board game hobby to hear about our perspective on a different topic and join in on the discussion. So in this episode, our topic is teaching board games. How do we teach board games? How do we like to learn board games? What are some ways you can teach board games? Before we get into our topic, every episode we will also have a homework segment. That will be something we assign to you as a listener to do, something you can take action on related to board games and the topic for the episode. After the homework segment of each episode, we will also have a game terms segment. So this is where we talk about two game terms and discuss them very briefly. So if you are new to board games, maybe you will hear a term that you are not familiar with, or we might talk about a term that maybe you play a lot of board games and you haven't heard used before. So these will be new terms. Today we talk about the teach and the magic circle. So stay tuned for that. And finally, Jay and Spencer love to talk and I love to talk with them. So actually after each episode, there will be some bonus content, so some extra content, an extra episode actually, about either a top list or games we have played recently. So you can expect to receive that episode to your podcast, any podcast platform you use, a couple days after the normal release of Board Gaming with Education. So before we jump into the episode, let's hear from Amped Up Learning. So you've heard me talk about Amped Up Learning before. They are a great teacher-owned company, and we hope that you can find some resources that may be useful in your classroom on their website. So they do have some free resources you can find at ampeduplearning.com. They also have some paid resources. These resources include like escape rooms or game-based learning activities. They also have a couple of their own board games, including Freck and Risk It. So these are two games that might be great for you as a teacher or if you just love history. They also have a lot of great apparel on their site for teachers, history buffs. So if you do go to their site, be sure to use the coupon code BGEGAMES. That's BGEGAMES, all one word, for a 10% discount. So check them out. That's ampeduplearning.com. All right, let's get to the discussion. Welcome to Board Gaming with Education. I have Jay and Spencer here with me again. This is our second episode. We're calling these episodes our Geekology episodes, so we are officially Geekologists. Is that okay with you guys?
I've been called worse. I can roll with it. Spencer?
Fine with me.
So we have Jay. Jay, can you introduce yourself really to our listeners?
My name's Jay. I run the website CardboardEast.com, where I review board games in English. In English. And this is Spencer, good friend.
My name is Spencer, and I own a couple restaurants here in Taipei, and one of them has a den in the bottom that nobody knows about with a bunch of board games.
I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
So these episodes, we are actually going to have three segments. The first segment is going to be a homework discussion. We did not do this last episode, but we're going to start this episode where we talk about a topic and give you an actionable thing you can do based on our topic. The next segment will be gaming terms, or we might
what
name
does Spencer it. Know
nothing.
And we'll talk about two gaming terms. I think we're going to have Jay throw out two terms this episode, and then we'll have topic time. Jay's given me some gestures.
Well, we're gonna do a thing because Dustin and I both play a lot of board games. Where Spencer plays a few board games, but he mostly lives in the RPG world. So we're going to throw out these terms, and we're going to see if Spencer knows them. The teach. Do you know what that means?
I'm going to venture a guess and say that is the method of teaching a game.
Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. Yeah. But can you use it in a sentence?
My friend Joel does the teach. I don't know.
Sure, that's fine. The teach was good. The teach was bad. The teach was long. Next, we have one called... I I've never heard the teach before until, I think, earlier this year. Have you used it before? Like,
no, I heard it on another podcast as well. I think Tuesday Night Games maybe talked about it. Yeah,
I think I heard it on Shut Up and Sit Down. I'm just going to say that they're making up words because those Brits do those things.
They're good at it, though.
We're going to get some flack for that.
I'll bring it on. Shut Up and Sit Down. The next one we have is called the Magic Circle.
The Magic Circle.
Magic Circle.
The Magic Circle. I have never heard of this term until Dustin mentioned it. But did you have a guess what it meant?
It's the safe place that you put yourself in before you learn a game. And
my grandmother's blankets in the basement. In my den that no one knows about where I keep my board games.
2 hours into learning a new game, you're rocking in your Magic Circle.
Just rocking in a chair like a child. Yeah, I think it's the like an agreed upon or non-verbally agreed upon social contract prior to you play a game.
Yeah, it was explained to me something about pooping on a floor.
Well, that would be the extreme case. I think that was Dustin's example. Yeah, that I'm not a lover of poop. I think poop jokes are fun, but yeah, I mean, that would be uncool to do.
That would not be a nice thing to do.
Yeah. But I think that's funny because most game groups that I've been in or that I've talked to, they all have one person who just kind of hovers there on that border, who does something inappropriate or tries to game a game and kind of takes away from the fun. Have you guys had experiences with that?
Yeah, they often quickly become the subject of ridicule and usually bow out on their own. But sometimes it can cause a group to fall apart. I mean, that's really common in RPG world for sure. But that has a lot to do with every player bringing something, an idea of how the game is supposed to be played with them, and it's not always compatible. Board games can have the same thing.
A friend of mine, he complained about one RPG session where the GM was the husband and his wife was in the party. And she would kind of do things that would break the rules, and then he would let it slide. There would be this awkward pause, like, in the group where everyone went silent, and they're all looking at each other like, she can't do that, she can't do that, she can't do that, she can't do that. And they kind of look at the GM, and the GM just like, sure, honey, that's fine. And everyone's like, just so much. Have you had that problem?
You know, to be honest, the biggest problems we generally have are usually within the role-playing aspect of it. You're given a situation and you're supposed to suspend disbelief. You're supposed to be like, okay, or you're in this situation where you have this person tied up and you're trying to question them. It's taking a little longer than one of the players wants, so he says, I stab him. And everyone goes, what? Which, you know, depending on what kind of game you're playing, I mean, if you have a group of players that want to blow off some steam and just go through a, you know, everybody's played something like Red Dead or some of those open world games where it's just like, I'm going to save here and then I'm going to kill everybody in the town. And then.
Yeah, I'm in Merc mode. I just want to kill everything on my site.
Yeah. And then go back and redo it. But the thing is, in a tabletop RPG or in a pen and paper, you can't rewind. You're supposed to suspend disbelief. So it's not like, I'm going to just have my little save spot. So unless everybody is into that, you can't do that. Because then all of a sudden it's like, well, I, as the GM who wrote this little story for you or used pretty long story that I'm following along on an adventure model, now don't have this tool that you were supposed to use to go to the next step because you killed it.
Yeah.
And now I got to figure out how to do that. And, you know, having it happen once or twice is fine. But if it's like a regular thing, then what are you supposed to do?
Right.
And it comes to head, and then eventually you have to have a conversation or,
And so I have a question then for both of you. How do you help someone realize they are breaking the magic circle or they're outside of the magic circle?
Man, adulting is not fun sometimes.
Yeah, being an adult sucks. it's always going to be awkward, like no matter what. Nobody likes to, especially if they're playing a game. They're doing something they enjoy. They do it for fun. They don't want to be pulled aside and told you're doing fun wrong.
You don't know what fun is. Let me tell you what fun is.
It'd be much easier if you're playing with kids constantly, because then you could just, hey, don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
Because kids listen, you know.
Yeah. I think that's why it's really hard to find a good game group, too. I mean, we have our own ideas of what fun is, and some people maybe enjoy this fun way of doing it, while others enjoy it this way.
That's one of the main things I learned from my first time I went to Essen, was that games are different for everyone. So when you're playing a game, everyone is deriving fun differently. Mm. You know, someone might be there for the strategy, someone might be there for the role play element, someone might be there for the social aspect of it, someone might just be there because they just love throwing dice.
Yeah.
So it's hard sometimes to remind people to be like, hey, you know, this is everyone's experience. I want to make sure everyone leaves happy, and you're being a party pooper.
Yeah, it would be nice if everyone was really self-aware, but unfortunately, especially working in the service industry, you realize that most people are not at all.
The best advice is usually, I mean, the last result, I think, is always pulling someone to the side. I would never like to call someone out in public, like at in front of the table. That's usually a dangerous situation. It could make it worse, right? And then you could just ruin the game for everyone. I think what I usually do is I usually do something kind of passive aggressive by, well, making like a side comment, and then kind of as a reminder to everyone, like, hey, we're here for fun. Or I might say something like, wow, I'm having fun throwing these dice, or this is pretty fun. I'm having fun playing this game, or I'm happy that I'm here with all of you.
Except you.
But everyone games interacts differently, and I think that's just something you have to get used to as an adult, and try and be patient with that. I met Eric Lang this weekend, and I got to hang out with him and play some games with him. And man, he is a trash talker. He loves to talk trash in games. And I used to play like that. However, I think being in Taiwan for so long, like most Taiwanese gamers are very, you know, chill people. They do not talk trash. So being around that, once again, was a little jarring, but kind of like a breath of fresh air at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy that, actually. I've been sitting down with people who don't trash talk a lot and playing games with them, and it, you know, takes you out of it a little bit. I want to be more involved in what's happening.
You take my money, I will ruin you. I will ruin you now in every game we play. I don't mind that. I honestly don't. I enjoy the social interaction, and I think trash talking is part of the fun.
Yeah. I love the trash talking, especially like, right, what you said, the social interaction. But as long as you don't hold a grudge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, that's the tough part. Like, everybody's different. Everybody derives fun a different way. So, I mean, trash talking is usually something I do with people I know well enough to do it with. I mean, we play a lot of N64 Smash, and I get my old buddies over and we play. And I have one friend who is amazing at it. So unless I've been playing constantly, he will just destroy me. And he'll destroy me in ways where I'm dead in like 10 seconds, like all four of my lives. And then he'll look at me and go, "You suck." And be like, do you want to add some computer players on your team? How about everybody against me? And I'm just sitting there smoldering like, mother, you know? And he could be destroying me in some ways where it could be a little more enjoyable for him. No, he's going to throw me off and spike me.
I had a friend like that. He just I'm going to beat you with one button, Jim. I'm going to use one finger. Boop, boop, look. I'm just pressing this one button and you're dead.
Yeah, exactly. Thing.
But that, again, like that's playful, and it's nothing too aggressive. I've never had a situation where I had to stop a game mid-game. I've had once or twice, I think, in my entire life where I had to stop a game. and just be like, I'm not having fun anymore. I'm sorry to do this. And then I left.
Mm.
Never had to do that yet. I don't know if I just don't play enough games, but
I have had to kind of say, how am I going to say this without saying?
Well, if you're a GM, it's sure it's easier. It's like, Spencer, you're now in a bottomless pit, so you can go home now.
Yeah. Well, more the issue of people trying to do a public forum, you know, getting a bunch of people together and then splitting them off into playing games with each other is really can be tenuous, especially if the people running the games are doing, let's say, inappropriate things. Or will offhandedly say things that people go, what, excuse me? What did you just say? We were running pen and paper nights, and it just came down to there were a couple people. I had a friend walk up to me and say, hey, who is that guy? And he wasn't there for the pen and paper night. I'm like, he's running this game. And he goes, he's racist. He's been sitting there making racist jokes for like the last 5 minutes. And it's like, okay, well, this is over.
Yeah, I imagine it's even, I mean, you're running the establishment too. It's not just responsible for a game environment. You're responsible for that restaurant too.
Yeah, I actually got to tell you, I've decided I'm not going to do pen and paper events anymore. It is actually just way too difficult. We run our own games, actually. Dustin's participating in the one that we're doing now. It's just, you need to have an intimate setting with the people you know. Otherwise people will cancel. If you have it every week or every month, people will push it down the road because it's a free thing. You're basically sitting around and having a conflab. You're just sharing an idea of a story in your heads together. It's not a whole big commitment. It doesn't feel like it.
That's a shame. I really liked your weekly pen and paper notes.
I did too, but just... a couple of the people that I had coming to run the games, nice people, but they couldn't get any of the players to come back. And I sat in on a couple of the games and realized why. I mean, it's just the way they play is not what most people want.
Yeah.
So that died. It's just too difficult to do. Board game groups, though, on the other hand, much, much easier to do.
People, well, the commitment is less.
Yeah.
I'm not committing to a 70-hour, 80-hour campaign.
It's also has a lower barrier of entry, and you have something to Jenga in front of you.
I think it goes back full circle to our magic circle, and that's games have a stronger magic circle, I think, than RPGs do, or more set magic circle.
Yeah. Well, it also requires less of a commitment. I mean, for my game, you have to have at least read through 20, 30 pages. And I mean, there's a good 600 pages of content there you could read through. And that's just not something you're going to get in board games unless you're trying to play Terra Mystica or something.
Well, there are some rule books
definitely exceptions to
that. Wow, some of those rule books.
Gloomhaven, that big game over there is one of them.
No, that rule book was actually a joy to read. It read very smoothly.
I mean, that's the idea behind pen and paper, too. You're supposed to be a joy to read.
I think Gloomhaven is good to read, but there are so many like little things. If you want to play the game right, you have to be aware of. I spent a lot of time in Facebook groups answering and asking questions to learn how to play.
App for it.
Well, I think that the rule book was actually very well written, and it was very... It was very clear. I understood how to play the game. The only problem is that with games like these, is that there are a lot of rules. And sometimes the rules will interact with each other that you did not anticipate. And there are, like, timing issues is one thing. And then that's when you begin to look back into the rule book, going, well, what happens in this one particular instance?
They have a strong, really great FAQ for the game online, too. So, well, this brings us perfectly into our topic of learning and teaching games. So
how do you do the teach?
Did you guys like time that before you came
no,
here?
No, it's just me and Spencer are close.
Literally.
Yeah. Like sharing a phone.
Shoulder to shoulder.
Sharing a microphone. So Dustin, how do you like to do the teach?
Me when I teach a game or when I learn a game?
I'm going to assume that I like to learn games how I like to be how I like to teach games, and I teach games how I like to learn games. I assume that all three of us follow that.
I'm way too scatterbrained for that.
What'd you say, Jen?
I remember there was a great YouTube tutorial. It's a joke tutorial on how to play and learn Magic the Gathering. And it goes, it clips ahead, it starts explaining, and the guy keeps going, oh yeah, and this, oh yeah, and this, that's me. 6 hours later.
I would say that normally I like to give a rundown of what the game is about, like thematically, because some people enjoy that. And for me, there's some games that I'm almost instantly just not ready to play because of the theme. I like to know what the theme is. If I enjoy the theme, I'm even more involved before we even learn how to play. If I don't like the theme, I still kind of give it a try. And sometimes the theme ends up not being important.
Yes, that is also very true. Mm.
So yeah, I'll start with that and then go into, I guess, the basic objective of the game. And I'm like Spencer, we were talking before, is I like to just figure it out. So as long as I know what we need to do to get from A to B, and B is this is how you win the game, teach me the few things you need to do to get there, and then I'll figure out how to get there.
Yeah, that's what I usually do. I usually do the theme first, because I feel that if the theme is in the background of your mind, then all the actions that I'll explain in the future might make sense, and you'll be able to tie those actions to the theme if that's what the game works. I like to also give the goal immediately up front, because then as you teach people how to play the game, they're always thinking in the back of their head, like, oh, I do this to do this to do this, and that's how I win. So I don't have to go too much into strategy.
Though I'm getting flashbacks of trying to teach Twilight Struggle. And there are, you know, multiple ways to win, and the strategy is pretty complex, and there's a lot of levels as to how you play. You know, you start off with neither of you knowing how to do, feeling it out. Second level is you know how to play, but you don't know the cards, right?
No.
And then the last level is you have all the cards memorized, because that just happens the more you play. And you basically are sitting with the cards waiting for them to play, you know, certain ones at a time, like Bear Trap. Just my least favorite card. I've lost 8 turns on Bear Trap before. So that's one of those games where I keep going, oh yeah, and this, oh yeah, and this, and I'm trying to explain how to do a coup and how to do, you know, on a lesser level, something easier like Seven Wonders Duel, which is actually a really easy game. Still, I find it very difficult to strip it down, and I just want to set it up and play it and be like, here, we'll figure it out as we play. But there are certain people that want to know all the rules up front.
Yeah, I think it's because time is such a valuable real estate. It's such a valuable commodity. Like, you only have, you know, 52 weekends. If you only game on the weekends, then you're only playing 52 games. If you only play one game every weekend, that's 52 times you're playing the game. And how many of those are you going to sacrifice for a learning game?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think even in when I do my reviews, I experimented before with completely teaching someone how to play the game. Anyone who wanted to read that review could completely learn how to play the game. And it took up way too much time. And what I try to do instead is show readers what they're doing on their turn. So on your turn, this is how you interact with the game. And then that is usually how I like to view games. And I find that usually shows someone. So I typically, when I teach a game, I'll break it down and I'll repeat what I do, because I'm a teacher and that's what I do. So I might say, like, on your turn, you're going to do A, actions. You do your actions that you do. Then B, you'll build something. Then C, you'll clear your area. Then D, you discard. And I might just repeat those steps. So we do this and we do that and we do this. And what was the first thing we do? Okay, what's the second thing we do? What's the third thing we do? And then we do what, Spencer? And like, we discard our cards. Excellent. And I find that by asking people questions, I'm helping them not space out and kind of stay focused. Usually for bigger games, I'll dictate to people, like, here are these cards, shuffle them and put them here. Here are these, make sure everyone has $7 and 3 meeples. So by giving people little jobs to do as we're setting up the game, they're also interacting with the game. And then they're kind of curious. They're looking at the cards and wondering what they're going to be, how they're going to use. And that makes them feel more invested, I think, in the teach.
to add on to what you said and to go back a little bit, but I do have a question for you. But before that, there's something we talked about where if the rules match the mechanics, and I think that helps as a teacher, a lot of times you want to connect like an idea of something to something more physical, more tangible. And one example, like Sushi Go, at the end of the round, you don't keep the dessert, like you don't shuffle it back into the deck because you don't eat dessert throughout the meal, you save it till the end. Yeah. So it's a good way to like...
Oh, that is a theme. Good way of teaching it. Holy crap, yeah. I should have done that a long time. You know how many times I have to teach Sushi Go?
Oh, wow.
Okay, that's a good
association. Yeah. So like trying to think of ways that the mechanic associates with like a real life example. There's another one I was trying to remember.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. That's why I like to mention that theme first.
Yeah. But I do have a question for you. Okay. How annoyed do you get? Because you talked about you would go through the steps and repeat the steps and ask people questions throughout. How annoyed do you get if you get a Spencer or a Dustin that's sitting there and they're like not really paying attention? Durr. They get to it and they're like, okay, so how do I do this now? Because that's, I mean, for me, I almost tune out the teach. Okay. Until like I like listen to the first couple seconds and then I'm like,
yeah. Well, I think as a teacher, I was explaining this actually to my new trainee because I had a new student in and I was telling to the trainee, I'm like, well, we have a new student today, so I'm going to be teaching very differently than usual. And he's like, well, it's just one more student. And I said, no, it's not one more student. That one student is going to interact with each student differently as well as the teacher. So adding one person into the group adds maybe 20 different relationships. And each of those relationships is going to affect the atmosphere of the room. So as a teacher, I'm used to keeping an eye on every single student, finding out what they're all doing, and knowing how they're all responding to me and what I'm saying. So when I'm teaching a board game, it kind of translates over, and I could see the level of interest and who's paying attention and who's not. So when I see someone isn't paying attention, I try to pull them into the conversation more.
You're familiar with what eyes glazed over looks like?
Yeah. I've been on many dates.
Yes.
But I think sometimes it's really frustrating when someone's on their phone. You know, I understand everyone's busy. And it kind of depends on player count, because if it's a six-player game, then, and if one person's lost, I think that's fine. As opposed to, like, if it's a three-player game and, like, both of them are not paying attention, then it's kind of rough.
Right.
But that might also be my fault for picking a game for those players. Because I think the games you choose need to match the players as well.
Right. So, like, when people go up, and so we get a lot of couples and people who just come in twos asking me which game to play on the wall. And I got tons of great two-player games. I don't hand them Twilight Struggle. That is not something that...
Well, you got to be here for 3 hours and keep in ordering food, right?
Yeah.
Twilight Struggle is your thing.
Good thing you're not a buffet.
There wouldn't even be room to put your food.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think that's the other thing, too. Like, sometimes, like if you have two friends who love, like, war games, putting, I don't know, Trois or Troyes in front of them may not be what they're interested in.
Mm. My biggest issue actually with the teach isn't that I am way off topic when I'm trying to teach them the game. It's usually because there are multiple tables at Hooch downstairs where I've got a, you know...
In the den.
If there are two or three tables and they're all playing a game they don't know how to play, I'm standing there trying to give them the rules light version of it so I can go to the next
table. Yeah, I've been in that position. That's not... fun.
No, it's not. And you can, I can see the look on their face. It's like, you picked a really good game, but I've only got 5 minutes to strip this down for you, and I'm not going to be able to coach you through it. Like, I was actually just teaching dice fishing, and fortunately, I was able to get enough of the rules across. I mean, it's not a complex game at all.
No.
That they enjoyed it and played multiple games of it. But there have been times where I've put a game in front of them and... what's it called? Go Fish Yourself, which is a silly, silly game. But it's fun for people who are drinking and not drinking, which we have both kinds. We have tables coming in where, like, two of them are drinking. And it's a very movement-based game, so it's fun for everyone. But if I'm not there coaching them along, they might go, let's just play Jenga or Monopoly or... poker or something, because they all know how to do that. I was like, I have those games there, but they suck compared to everything else. Like, come on.
Well, the game has to match the people. I think for you, your question though, Dustin, was, what do I do when Dustin's playing on his phone?
I don't play my phone. I just don't pay attention.
I slap him across the face, kick him out of the game group, and I tell him that's what.
Toss the table.
Flip the table over. No, I try and make it interactive to the person who's spacing out more. I try to bring them into the teach as well.
So I guess what about, or I wanted to comment on something Spencer said is teaching, and it kind of goes all along with what we're already talking about, is we're not only teaching a game, we're like an ambassador to that game.
Sure.
And do you think that it's part of the job of the teacher, if you're not playing the game, to be there and be available and help them have a good experience with the game? Or are you just someone, I'm here to give you the rules and then the experience is up to you?
Well, ideally you do kind of, at least I feel like you need to be there, because every time I actually stay there and help them along with the game, they enjoy it. When I have to move on to another table, I'd say more often than not, they give up. There are very few groups that will have the fortitude to power through it and keep going. Now, if it's something like Sushi Go, where they just need to grasp it, and then maybe have one or two questions when something comes up, like the dessert.
that you now know how to teach.
Yeah, that I now know how to teach. Then they'll keep going with it. But if it's something like, say, Hive, which is something I recommend to people a lot, they're trying to figure out how to, you know, each piece moves on its own, how the beetle moves. They might just pack it up after a game.
Yeah. I think that's the rough part. You were asking me, like, what if someone isn't paying attention? Well, I think the result is that if they're not paying attention, then as a teacher, you're dreading the questions that they're going to bombard you with as you play the game. And then you just want to stand up on your high horse and be like, and that's why you should pay attention. But I swallow that because I know that, okay, it's a learning game. They're always going to ask me a lot of questions. So when I'm doing the teach, I just try to bulldoze through the rules and make it very clear. Like, this is your turn. You have these five options. Pick one. You have five options. Pick one. Then I try to break it down with them. I try to create some sort of catchphrase that I could just throw at them, so it reduces my time that to interact with them. It's like, you have five options, remember? How many options do you have? You have five. Oh, yeah, it's these five. I could do this, this, or this. And then if they have a question later on, I'll just deal with that as it comes. And I think people are always going to have questions. Even you, like you, maybe you spent that whole time reading that rule book, and then something happens, we're like, oh, I don't know how these two rules interact with each other. Which one triggers first? So I think that's just natural, and you should just try and be patient and roll with it. I try not to go too much into strategy, because I find that kind of makes it more complicated, and then that's where people really begin to space out. I think as you're playing the game, I might recommend to them, be like, well, if you don't know what to do, like, why don't you look here? I'm sure there's an option here. It's like, remember, this is how you win the game. You want to get points. How do you get points? That might be a better move.
Right. We can tell Jay and I are teachers, because it's like, you have to remember this phrase, and you will not forget. And then that's the phrase you remember that rule for.
Ideally is what happens. Don't underestimate the power of forgetfulness.
I think one thing we have to keep in mind too, and is why maybe we will get a lot of questions, is we're all different learners, and how we learn a game is going to be very different from how someone else learns a game. So even if we think that this is how you teach it and you're teaching it very clear, that person might not pick up what you're teaching.
Like, yeah. Leave the puddings aside. Leave them aside.
Don't put it. Oh, Spencer, you do this every time.
Why don't you get this?
The pudding's for the end.
Well, I mean, I keep going back to
Twilight Struggle, because I'm desperately trying to get somebody to play with me like once a week or something. And you said discussing strategy. Now, the thing is, if you're playing Twilight Struggle, and you're totally leaving out how to play, you will absolutely destroy a person within like 30 minutes. So how to explain that to a person? And I think Twilight Struggle is kind of an interesting game where I think you kind of need to have someone on your level playing with you to, you can't just teach somebody while playing with them. You can teach somebody while having two players of the same level.
Sure.
Like two people who've never played before, and that works.
Well, it's a two-player game, and just like most two-player games I know, they're best enjoyed when both the players are about the same level, right? And when you have someone who's played the game as many times as you have and someone who's only played a handful of times like me, I mean, you'll destroy me every single time.
So Twilight Struggle, I know it's a super deep strategic two-player game. I have not played it, and maybe someone has not. What would you say, like, how can you explain the game?
There's so many facets of it, but I mean, think about history is actually kind of, if you know your history, right, then you got a good idea of where in the early, middle, and late war cards will be hotspots. So like, for example, in the beginning, and then the other thing is looking at the map. So in the beginning, the opening move is almost always in Iran, because it's a choke point. It's a place you can get into Asia. But
not Thailand?
Not Thailand, no. or you could go risky and go to Italy, because that will give you inroads into Europe. And Europe, if you own Europe, you win the game. Now, it's extremely rare for you to win the game by owning Europe, because you have to score it, one. So you have to hold it when you score it. And the other thing is it can be lost very easily.
Dustin has to glaze on.
Okay. Yeah, okay. That's what I was saying. There's so many things this game. It's such an incremental game.
Well, I would say that, like, for Twilight Struggle, I would, one, first explain, like, how you interact with the game. Like, oh, it's a card-driven game. You know, you have a hand of cards, I have a hand of cards. We both draw from the same deck, and then we take turns playing cards. And the cards will do different effects. And these are the things that you could possibly do on your turn. And then basically, and these are the three ways how you win the game.
Four ways.
Okay.
Europe, end scoring, get to 21st. I guess end scoring, get to 21st or similar. And then there's a card at the end. Oh, no, five. And then five. Or cause nuclear war.
Okay. Yes. So there are like five ways that can end the game. I think for that is I teach it in continents. Like when those scoring cards are and where they're likely to appear.
Yeah, that's a good way to start. But how to add, I mean, one of the mechanics that makes it so cool is that the cards in your hand, they're either U.S. or Soviet or neutral. Yeah. And if you are the U.S. when you play a Soviet card, you can either play, when you play it.
They can trigger the event.
Yeah, it triggers the event. So you're always choosing between whether you're doing the number on the top of the card, which ranges from 1 to 4, or you're doing the event, or you're having to do the event because it's not your country's card. And it's kind of a...
mitigating.
It's a strategy that's hard to wrap your head around because it's not in a lot of games, or at least not a lot of games I've played.
It is now, but it all started there. Does that help you out?
Yeah.
I see you writing notes.
So I think that kind of covers most of what we wanted to talk about the teach and teaching games. Do you have anything last to add or any suggestions that our listeners can do as homework, something we can do before our next episode?
Don't try to coup West Germany.
Okay. Coup West Germany. Get back to
that. That's a lesson you can learn.
I think that the next time you teach a game, have your goal be to that you are interacting with each person that you're teaching. To be mindful of the level of interest of each person you're explaining the game to. And not just have your goal be, these are my rules, I'm just running through them as quick as I can because I just want to get to the game as soon as possible. Like, be mindful of each person that you're interacting with, because that'll also teach you who's most likely going to ask a question later on in the game, the strategies that each people is going to play, the level of interest they have, and who is going to break that magic circle.
So Jay, the teacher, the homework, go teach a game, be conscious about what people are paying attention and about I wasn't paying attention. What else did you say?
I think
I'm flipping this table right now.
One thing you could add is clever associations. I think actually you're coming up with that sushi
like dessert thing.
That is brilliant. Good. And yeah, you can do that for a lot of games.
Not all of them, but like no, a lot of games do that. The theme interacts with the mechanics very, very well. You know, that's my favorite Euro game is Carson City. So the big theme of that is that it's in the Wild West and you can rob people. So if Spencer's making a lot of money at his saloon, you could rob his saloon and take half his money. And if Spencer's worried about and paranoid that people are going to rob his saloon, he'll put a guard, one of his workers there on his saloon to protect it. So no one will rob his saloon like they're supposed to.
So homework is to either think of or be conscious about when you teach a game and try to think of a way to incorporate a way that they can remember. Or if you have some ideas or suggestions, you can find us on social media, Board Gaming with Education. And before we go, Spencer and Jay, where can they find you if they wanted to get a hold of you?
You can find Spencer in his den.
In my den.
Of Ooh Cha Cha.
My jail, my prison. But with lots of board games down there, so it's fun. And if you want to play, Twilight Struggle, I'm there. I'm trapped there, 5 to midnight every day.
If you come on Sunday, he'll make you a mimosa.
If I have champagne.
I had mimosas last time. I had a lot of fun.
And Jay, where can they
find you? You can find me on cardboardeast.com or on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. I'm there some of the time, not all the time. I have stuff to do, like go to Spencer's Den.
And drink mimosas.
You guys drink mimosas. That's because we're sharing a microphone and we're huddled together for warmth.
For warmth, yeah. It is quite cold right now. Yeah.
All right,
as cold as some places.
My heart.
Thank you guys for stopping by again, and we'll see you next time. I want to thank Jay and Spencer again for sharing their insight about the Teach and the Magic Circle. It was a lot of fun to have them on. But don't go anywhere. We want to thank you as well. And we are doing that by releasing some extra content for you. So every time that Jay and Spencer are on the podcast, we're going to do a special follow-up episode. It's a short segment about a top 5 list or games we've been playing recently. We tend to talk a lot and we wanted to split up the content into 2 different episodes. So just in time for your work week to start, you can get an episode on Monday. This Monday, we will be talking about our top 5 IP board games. So be sure to tune in to listen into that. You can find us on social media. And as always, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening in this week. If you like what you heard, be sure to let us know. You can find us on social media as Board Gaming with Education or BGE Games, or email us at podcast@boardgamingwitheducation.com. If you want to support our podcast, be sure to check out our support page on our website. As always, teach better, learn more, and most importantly, play more. Thank you for listening, and until next time.
One other way you can support our podcast is by checking out our sponsor, Amped Up Learning. You can go to their website, ampeduplearning.com. They're a really cool website. They have some cool apparel for those who are teachers or educators, or maybe if you just like history, there's some cool t-shirts on there and other apparel as well. They also have a couple board games, one called Freck and one called Risk It. Freck is a new tabletop card game and classroom resource aimed at teaching your students key social studies vocabulary in an engaging, competitive, and creative way. It's easy to learn and it makes Freck a fun game to play. It's a must-have for every history classroom and every history buff. So if you do go to their website, be sure to use the coupon code BGEGAMES. That's all one word, BGEGAMES. Check out what they have. It's a huge way to help us and help out our podcast. So again, that's ampeduplearning.com, the coupon code BGEGAMES. And as always, thank you for listening.